The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Senior Chief Rob Burrows. I am your host this morning, retired United States Navy Seabees, two combat tours in Iraq, and 23 years serving this nation under the United States flag for the United States Navy. And the birthday for the United States Navy is coming up this week. It is Wednesday, October 13th. And so happy birthday to all of our men and women who serve the United States Navy or who have served the United States Navy, and to our Navy across the world who is serving and protecting us right now. And for those individuals, you know, it's not just sailors on the sea. There's so many other parts of the Navy, such as the SEALs and the Seabees, who are out digging the ditches, who are out doing the special operations. The corpsmen that are out with the Marine Corps that are doing their job, just like we lost the corpsmen there in Afghanistan with the Marines. They're putting their lives on the line. They're serving this nation. We don't hear about them enough. We don't say thank you to them enough for what they do. And next month will be the Marine Corps birthday, and we'll talk about the Marine Corps then. But right now, I just want to say thank you to all the men and women who have served our nation under the flag and for the Navy for your duties. Whether you served abroad or you served at home, you wore the uniform, you continue to wear the uniform, and we thank you for your service. We thank you for the sacrifice, and we remember those who have given their lives through the years. My father was a gunner's mate on the Liberty ship during World War II. He ran the 20 millimeters and the 3-inch guns on the Liberty ships to help protect those. To his knowledge, from what he told me, that he was they had sunk a Japanese submarine in the South Pacific, and they had been, you know, attacked by kamikazes and different things like that. My father was at Nagasaki 26 days after the dropping of the bomb. He was there in Tokyo Harbor on the USS President Adams at the time that the war was ended, and he had taken some time. They had checked out some 45s. Pistols, and he and a couple of his buddies, they hopped on a train there in Tokyo Harbor and took the train into Nagasaki. And after going through some of the pictures that my mother had given me, I have the original pictures that he had taken of Nagasaki and the devastation and the damage that had been done. And those items are in the Northern California Veterans Museum as part of my family heritage back to our nation for others to see and for others to understand. And one of the things about pictures coming back from veterans from those situations, when families donate those pictures have never been published. They're not in the books. They're not in the encyclopedias because they come out of the private collections of the different family members who donate these items to the museum. And so it was always very amazing to me as we go through and we research these pictures and we look at this hand-to-hand history, the real items that take place, to be able to see those things up close and say, nobody else has ever seen this except for that veteran who served there, who took that picture, and myself or my staff. And that is a great privilege for us to be able to see those items, to preserve those items through the Museum Heritage Program, to be able to make sure that they're archived and that they're housed in our museum archive and restoration facility. And as we move forward with our project, it's actually very thrilling to me to see all the different things that are taking place. Let me tell you, it is a lot of hard work for our staff and our volunteers who step up to the plate and do all of the work behind the scenes that nobody ever sees. And so, my guest this morning is going to be John Baker, who is on our board of directors, who is one of the hardest working men I've ever known and is a great mentor to me. And so as we move forward to the program, I'll introduce him a little bit later. But once again, when these items are donated, when you donate these items to the museum, and we safeguard these items right here in Northern California, it is a privilege and an honor and a great responsibility to receive these items and to be the caretaker of American history, American heritage, and to honor and to portray the lives of the men and women who serve this nation. And it, you know, it's not everybody can say that. Not everybody has that opportunity. Not everybody cares. There's so many times, we've talked about it before, where history goes in the trash can. The next generation says, we don't want this. We don't know what to do with it. They throw it on eBay or they throw it in the trash. That is a travesty to our national heritage by itself. That's a tragedy to that individual who served our nation and brought those items back. So when you're out there, if you're going through different items, if you're going through family heirlooms and things like that, and you don't know what to do with those items, please do not throw them away. Bring them to the Northern California Veterans Museum and let us store them till we open our main facility and be able to save those items, to archive them properly, to make sure that they're preserved so that we can have them for the posterity of our nation and our future generations. Ladies and gentlemen, when it's thrown away, it's gone forever. I look at these fires that are all around us, and I think to myself, the devastation and the loss of the history and the heritage of every one of those family members. They have those pictures in their homes, and they have those items from their military family members or from their own personal experiences, from their own services. And those items are gone. They're ashes and they're ashes. And that history is gone. Those stories are gone. Those items are gone. And we're losing, literally losing, our heritage just through the travesty of these fires and all the things that are gone that will never be replaced. The memories that are gone, the thoughts, the keepsakes, the items that are telling those stories, they're just gone. And it's not just about military. It's about our American heritage. It's about all of the things from the families from the 1800s and the 1700s. Whether it be coins or paper or documents or anything like that, the letters and things. And so, once again, if you have the opportunity, all of the firearms, the antique firearms and swords and bayonets and everything else that have been lost to this tragedy of these fires in our community and all throughout California, every time something is burned and lost, it's gone forever. And if it's gone forever and nobody remembers, then nobody can recall those items. Nobody can be able to pass that on, to share that for future generations. It's one of the reasons that the Northern California Veterans Museum is so important as we continue to move forward. It has been a fantastic week for the Northern California Veterans Museum. The state of California Water Department, California Department of Drinking Water, has authorized our well at the museum property, which is just a major step. It's been 3 years coming for this process of getting the well authorized, our water authorized, as we move forward. And Shasta County came out, Environmental Health, and did a preliminary inspection. And the well has been passed. We're waiting for a couple more items and things to take place for us to be able to get our permit. But now Shasta County is preparing to permit our well as we move forward. And this has been a major hurdle of getting our own water. We had to approach the city of Anderson to see if they were going to support us with municipality water, and they denied the Northern California Veterans Museum. They said they're not coming up the hill where we were at, therefore we were on our own. We applied to the Cottonwood Water District, to their municipality, and they denied us. It took a year for them to deny us through the COVID because they only met every other month with their board. And so 3 weeks ago, we were denied from the Cottonwood Water District. And so we took all that back to the state of California, and they said, well, that's what we wanted to hear from the different organizations. But we had to get it from the word of those different organizations that they were going to deny the museum municipality water. So the state of California said, you've done everything that we asked you to do. Your water checks out good. The tests work out good. So we're going to authorize you the use of a private well for public use. And that's what the biggest thing is the state of California changed the law that you have to meet all these other requirements for a private well for public use. And so we have been jumping through hoops. We have been working our proverbial butts off to get the well maintained as far as the exterior of the housing and the wellhead. And part of our well building burned during that last fire we had in May on Memorial Day. And so we had to rebuild portions of that and to pour concrete for taking care of the protection of the well area and to move dirt away from the landslide area. And so we still have a little bit more dirt work to do and some other items that need to be finalized. And then we're going to have that permit for our water system. And then the next one is the permit for our septic system, which has basically been approved except for some final details, and then our use permit. Believe me, this has been a hard, uphill, rough road. We've been marching, but we're making it. We're doing it. We're seeing success in the community as we continue to move forward and bring this museum to Northern California. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Turtle Bay's fall plant sale has been extended now through the end of the year. Don't miss this chance to save big during this key season for planting perennials. The nursery is open Wednesday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed, a show on every other Sunday at 8 in the morning. Come check out my music and the deep thought and let me shatter your paradigm.
Let's keep it a honey. Them traitors think they won, but them patriots coming. You fall for anything if you don't stand for something. Some people say it's time to fight, but it ain't about nothing, yeah. And I only about it, got can't about it, nothing else. Yeah, it's time to fight. And it don't matter if you're black or white. And I know it's gonna take some sacrifice.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
HGA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Fall sometimes brings us smoke and ash. This is one of those years, and the health of you and your car is very important. At Premier Oil Change, our 30-point certified service will not only check the fluids in your vehicle, but will make sure to reach the areas that ash, soot, and smoke can tax, like your engine's air filter. We also check your in-cabin air filter to help the quality of air that your family breathes. This is all part of our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Services require no appointment. Wait in the comfort of your own car with free Wi-Fi and beverage. Don't forget about Premier Oil Change Rewards Program. You earn points for every dollar you spend. Add to that, free fluid top-offs. Now that's service. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com. Located in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Reading on Lake Boulevard, next to Waterworks Park, or our newest location in Anderson, across from Round Table Pizza. All three locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Eco Manufacturing Company presents How People Make Things at Turtle Bay now through January 9th. Explore this new and interactive exhibit where kids can learn firsthand about the tools and processes used to make objects that we see and use every day. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
If tomorrow all the things were gone I'd worked for all my life, and and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, where the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. The man who died, who gave that right to me, and I'll gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee,
across the plains of Texas, oh, from sea to shining sea,
from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, the man who died, who gave that right to me, and I'll gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Once again, Senior Chief Rob Burrows here with us this morning from the United States Navy Seabees retired. And let me tell you what the motto for the Seabees is. The motto for the Seabees is, the difficult we do today, the impossible takes a little longer. And that's how it was all around the world when we served all around the world. We went in there, we took care of the difficult things immediately because we could handle those. They were tough, but we got in there and we got it done. And the impossible things we kept working on. It takes perseverance, it takes tenacity, it takes, blood, broken bones, sweat, tears, you name it. It takes all those things. And then we bring that attitude back home, and as we're working in a community, I've told many people, I would have never thought that it would take this much work to honor our veterans in the United States, as it has for us to be able to put together this museum to honor the men and women who serve this nation. When we were out at the Reading Airport, it was a very difficult time. We've just fought the bureaucracy with the city of Reading and everything, just one thing after the next. It was obvious they didn't want the Veterans Museum in Reading, California. We moved to Anderson. We worked with Anderson. There were some hiccups. We were able to take care of those and continue to get our building together and make that happen. And then now that we're working in Shasta County, the state of California and Shasta County have been working with us. Many of those details we've just had to go through, the steps of making all of those things come together. But you can't give up. It's difficult. It's tough. There's discouraging days. There's days you shake your head. There's days that are dark and you think to yourself, this is never going to happen. But you don't give up. You just put one foot in front of the other and tomorrow's another day. And that's what we've been doing with this entire program. That's what we have to do with our own lives, our personal lives. You know, it just seems like all the doors are closed, the windows are closed, there's no way out, things aren't just going to happen. But, you know, let me tell you, before, when I was in Iraq with our convoy missions, I used to walk around my convoy trucks and pray for them before we stepped out on a mission. Because I knew that I could not do it on my own. If God was going to bring us through that night and through those missions, it was going to be God and not me. And so it was critical. Many times my guys say, hey, Chief, what are you doing? I said, I'm just walking around the vehicles, just make sure everybody's good to go. And that's what I was doing. I was walking around our vehicles praying that we were good to go, putting it in God's hands, not mine, because my hands are weak, but his are strong. And so that's how it is with this entire museum project, is to honor the sacrifice of the men and women who served our nation, who continue to serve our nation. God's sacrifice for us, as our men and women serve for our freedom, God's sacrifice for our salvation. And there's times when I walk around that entire museum property, and it's like, okay, it's not my property, it's yours, God. It's your hand, it's your time, it's your deal. I'm just here to help move it along. I'm a tool in the process of making this happen. And so I give the Lord his thanks for his grace, and I thank him for helping us to move along. It's not my timing, it's his timing. And that is one of the most difficult things for me to understand in my life, is that it doesn't matter what Rob Burrows wants. What matters is when it's God's time, and God will just make it happen. And so I just have to thank him for the blessings that he gives to us, and thank him for the strength and the courage, because there's many days when I don't have strength or courage to move forward. I just want to kick the bucket and just say, I'm done with this. But you can't do that. You have to just continue to move forward. You have to look for strength from another source, which is not myself, because, boy, there's days when I'm just done. But God has been there and given us the strength. He's given us the vision. And he's helping us move this project forward, because we have to honor our men and women who serve this nation. We cannot forget that sacrifice. When I was in Iraq, there's several different times when we had to put military personnel in body bags because of IEDs, because of sniper fire, just because of war. And it's tough. But you can't stop. You can't stop when things get tough. That's when you have to pick yourself up and you have to keep pushing along to make things happen. Like I said, this was a really good week for the museum. Last Sunday, we had the Iron Soldier Ride at Yamaha Sea-Doo up there with Steve and Paula McCarley and their crew. And we were able to raise over $20,000 for Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. And so I cannot say thank you to individuals in our community who step up and to help support the museum and our programs for our military families, young and old, that do this out of their own compassion for our community and compassion for our veterans. And so once again, I say thank you to them for their hard work. Thank you to all of the motorcycle riders that were there who participated, and they donated, and they were part of the program because they believe in our veterans. It's veterans helping veterans. Many of those that were on the ride were veterans that were riding, that were there. They're part of that program. And to those companies and businesses in our community who donate to this program, whether it be a dollar or it be $3,000, we thank every single one of you who pulls that money out of your pocket and donates it to the program. And we want to remind you that Homeward Bound is a program, the museum, all of our programs, nobody gets paid. It is literally a labor of love. The men and women who volunteer hours and hours, lots of sweat, lots of tears, lots of heartache, because we're all just, you know, it's a tough road. Especially when you're doing it out of your heart sometimes, because you got to reach down deep. And they're never short hours. They're always long hours. But that's what makes it worth the while, when we can take care of others and know that the program is working and that people help to generate funds to donate to that. This week, the Northern California Veterans Museum received an $8,000 grant from Weyerhaeuser Timber and Lumber Corporation. And so to once again come back and to be with the museum, to work with the museum in the preservation of all the different things that are taking place, and to help our elderly veterans and widows in our program, and then also, once again, to help Homeward Bound. These companies, these corporations, when we ask for these grants, when we supply for these grants, and they choose us, that's a great responsibility, because now we have to watch every dollar as we expend it. We have to watch those families to make sure that we take care of them properly and to reach out and to do that. But it builds confidence in us, because those corporations have faith in our program, and they have faith in what we're doing, and that we're going to do the right thing with those funds. And so those things are so important as we continue to move forward in our community and to be able to take care of them. The continuation of the COVID and all the different things, there's enough issues in life as it is, let alone adding COVID to it, that we have been given the opportunity to reach out in our community and to be a light in the dark area and to support our community, our veterans community, and to make sure that we take care of them after they have served our nation and served faithfully. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
Reading Electric Utility, like more than 2,000 utilities across the country, is a nonprofit public power agency owned by the customers. This year, we are celebrating 100 years of serving the city of Reading. October 3rd through the 9th is Public Power Week, and we celebrate the benefits of living in a public power community. These benefits include low rates and local control. Community ownership means your money stays right here in Reading. Publicly owned utilities like REU provide excellent service and work directly for the community.
Professionals from all over the world have been working remotely, and the hardest part is finding a great place to focus and get the job done. Drop-in Go Working at 155 Lake Boulevard East offers modern and clean workspaces, call booths, conference rooms, and secure fast Wi-Fi. Drop-in's pricing is pay-as-you-go, with bundles of hours as low as $3 an hour. No contracts, no obligation. Drop-in Go Working, 155 Lake Boulevard East, next door to Starbucks and Subway across from Waterworks Park. Drop in for an hour or more and try it out. Drop-in.mobi. That's drop-in.mobi.
Hi, this is Billy Pilgrim from my buddy Doug Tooley from BNT 241-3474. You need to know that number, 241-3474, for the best service. Doug and his great crew at BNT makes TV so easy. They're the experts. They do TV wall mounts. They did one for us. TV antennas, surround sound. They can even set up your RV or set up your boat. Doug doesn't do dishes, but he'll dust behind your TV. So for all your TV entertainment needs, no matter what it is, call the local guys. Call my buddy Doug Tooley, the nicest man in the world, at 241-3474. 241-3474. They'll be there on time. They'll get the job done on time, and you're good to go.
With over 60 years of combined experience, let us, your locally owned TV guys, help you. We know what we are doing. You can trust us. Call me, Doug Tooley, 241-DISH. That's 241-3474.
Doug makes TV easy.
When people ask me for a recommendation for a heating or air conditioning company, I always say Alliance Heating and Air. Why? Well, they've been taking care of our HVAC system for 14 years. Professional, friendly, and willing to go to the extra step for their customers. I have found no problem too difficult or too minor for them to repair. I recommend Alliance Heating and Air with no reservations. You can reach them at 530-221-2642 or online at homecomfort.org. And they have 24/7 emergency assistance. Alliance Heating and Air.
It's the Ramsey Show, talk radio where debt is dumb and cash is king. Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com, featuring Armstrong and Getty, both smart and funny. Plus, you will hear Dave Ramsey, Mark Levin, and Ben Shapiro. And don't miss our local programming right here on KCNR.
Yonder, climbing high into the sun. Hear the sensitized into the blue. And some men pass in the world asunder. How they live, God only knew. God only knew.
All the men
drinking the skies to conquer gave us wings ever to soar.
Wings to soar.
And for the Lord, nothing will stop the U.S. Air Force.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that fanfare is for our guest this morning, which is John Baker. John Baker is a Korean War Air Force veteran. He has been on the board of directors for the Veterans Museum since 2009. Since almost the very beginning of the program, John has been a part of the program. He has been committed to the task. He has been supportive through all of the different programs that we have done. John has been a true mentor to me with his tenacity. He's a very quiet, very unspoken individual, but John is there all the time. He's one of the hardest working men I've ever met. He should have been a CB, not an Air Force guy. Because the man is in his late 80s and he outperforms me when we're out working in the field some days. And it's just amazing that he has the strength and the personal tenacity to do the things that he does. His heart is always in the program and working things along, and he's been involved throughout the community as long as I've known him. And John, it's just a privilege to have you here this morning and an honor to know you. Thank you for your service. And thank you for everything that you do for the Veterans Museum. Thank you for your example, for your hard work, and thank you for being committed to help and honor other veterans. And so, once again, I was talking earlier about days when I get discouraged and everything else. It's like, you're just worn out from all the hours of work and pushing and things that happen and things that don't happen. And you're always there. You're a silent majority. As far as that mentorship and being there as an encouragement. There's times you come to the board meetings and you don't say a word all night. But I know that you're there because you care. And you're there because you're part of the program, that you want this to be a successful program. And so I just want to say thank you again for everything that you do for the Veterans Museum and for our veterans in our community. So good morning. After all that. So, John, we want to talk a little bit about your Air Force duty when you served during the Korean War. We want to talk about what some of the influence were. I know that you were not drafted at that time, so you volunteered, and we want to know some of those influences that brought you into the Air Force and some of your the stories that you want to tell about when you first went in with the boot camp and where you served.
So, like I was telling Rob earlier, I was kind of bashful all through high school, and they always wanted me to get up and speak in class, and I didn't want to. So on the day I was 17, I decided to join the Air Force to get out of there because I hated high school. And the influence was really, my dad was a manager of a big grocery store in Orangeville. I was born in Sacramento and grew up in Orangeville, and it's right between McClellan Air Force Base and Mather Air Force Base, so I knew all these officers would come in the store, and my dad would have them at the house for dinner a lot. And this one couple, her parents were from London, and they came over, and they were all at the house one night. And I joined the day I was 17, and I went to, they shipped me to Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio for 13 weeks of training. And when I got out of that, I went to Aircraft and Engine School at Wichita Falls, Texas. And I was there for 7 months. And I went to Westover Air Force Base at Chicopee Falls, Massachusetts. I worked on DC-4s or C-54s for a couple of years, I guess. Then from there, they shipped me to Korea. I was based in Busan for a while. And then from there, they shipped me to Miho Air Force Base, and I was started test hopping B-26s out of battle damage because it was a repair station for all the B-26s that were battle damaged.
And a B-26, is that the Marauder?
Well, it's like a Marauder. It's the Douglas version of it.
Of the Marauder?
Yeah.
So when you were a kid and you were there between McClellan and Mather, you saw every World War II airplane that was flying at that time fly directly over your head.
Pretty well.
So you saw P-51 Mustangs and B-17s. And
B-24s.
24 Liberators. And P-47 Thunderbolts and P-39 Warhawk, Air Cobras. I mean, that just had to be an influencer by itself to sit out there and to watch all of those World War. I mean, those big engines screaming over as they were taking off or landing.
I had a cousin that designed a bomb thing, like the Norden bomb site. And it was all top secret. He had it in his garage, and he was trying to sell it to the government, but they went with the Norden bomb site. So that was interesting.
So you were able to see that at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So it was top secret, and he had it in his garage.
Yeah.
But nobody knew about it except individuals like yourself. Well, it had to start somewhere. I mean, where else, if they didn't have the opportunity other places? I mean, it's like many businesses that are starting in somebody's garage, and you just keep the door down and keep it quiet. So
I don't know why they didn't take it, but they went with the Norden anyway.
Well, obviously they felt that it wasn't as top secret as the Norden was.
Yeah.
Well, what was the deal with the Norden? The Norden side, they said that you could hit a picker barrel at what, 15,000 feet?
Pretty well.
So it was that accurate.
Yeah.
Although there's many times that we watched the different bombing when they're doing the aerials, and they're still, they're hitting everywhere except for the city, but they're hitting all around the city. It was always pretty interesting how those bombs drop like that.
You get in the clouds and the wind, like when they went over Tokyo, get high winds over there, just take the bombs off somewhere else.
Just push them all over the atmosphere till they hit the ground.
Yeah.
So when you were getting ready, when you were in boot camp at Lackland, tell us some of the things that took place while you were at Lackland. Some of the things that, because you were a quiet individual, did they make you talk when you were going through boot camp?
Not too much. We marched a lot, I remember, and went on the gun range and then went through a gas chamber thing. Had to put our masks on and take them off when they put the gas going through. Had to hold your breath for a couple of minutes. And
CS gas, riot gas. In being in the Navy Seabees for 23 years, I went through the gas chamber 12 times. And so it's like, well, you have to requalify every 24 months. Or you have to go through the chamber before you deploy. Yeah. So it didn't matter whether it was last week or a year ago, if you had to do it, they made you do it again. And it was just, you got to the point where, okay, we're going to go through the gas chamber. But I hated it every time.
Yeah. We only had it once. Basic training was all.
So, what were some of your schools like when you were you working on jet engines? Were you working on airplane engines or reciprocal engines?
Well, I went through A&E school. It was all recips. And when I was at Westover, I went to Rantoul Air Force Base out of below Chicago, and I worked on the, I mean, went to school for the J-47 engine, was the jet engine that was for the F-86. But I never worked on another jet engine. The rest of the time I was in the Air Force, it was all B-26s.
So basically, you just went through it during school.
Yeah. 30-day school.
We're coming up on a break right now. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest is John Baker, Korean War veteran, and we will be right back.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, this is Matt with Liberty Unabashed, a show on every other Sunday at 8 in the morning. Come check out my music and the deep thought and let me shatter your paradigm.
Let's keep it 100. Them traitors think they won, but them patriots coming. You fall for anything if you don't stand for something. Some people say it's time to fight, but it ain't about nothing, yeah. And I only about it, God can't about it, nothing else. Yeah, it's time to fight. And it don't matter if you're black or white. And I know it's gonna take some sacrifice.
Are you not getting treatment for a work injury because of denials? Call me, Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, at 530-262-2168, and I will get you results. The insurance company and your employer have an attorney working hard for them. You need somebody fighting for you. When you call Gorman Law, you're going to speak with me, not a paralegal, because the last thing you should be worried about is whether or not your attorney is working for you. There's no cost until your case is settled. Consultations are free and confidential. Call today, 530-262-2168. That's 530-262-2168.
All aboard! Haas Farms is now open, and it's family night fall fun for the whole family with a kids roller coaster, go-karts and bumper cars, pony rides, little bug playland and petting zoo, zip lines and pumpkin cannons. Jump on the Haas Express Railroad train and cruise around the orchard. Family night is every Thursday with free general admission thanks to Dinorama. Haas Farms is now open for all the fall fun and food. Haas Kettle Corn, hot dogs, Moe's Pizza, plus beer and wine for the 21 and over. All haunted attractions are open every Friday and Saturday. The Field of Screams, the Sinister Workshop, and the Zombie Slayer paintball excursions. Come blast some zombies on the Zombie Slayer rides. Special thanks to sponsors Above Board Construction and Roofing, Redding Heating and Air, Cinerama, Redding Harley Davidson, and Only One Benji. All tickets are being sold online this year, so for complete pricing and a schedule of events, get online to HawesFarms.com. That's HawesFarms.com.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge.
Palm Beach County Public Schools is being sued by PJI on behalf of 36 parents and 41 children. You see, the district is violating Florida state law and Florida's Parents' Bill of Rights with its school mask mandate. The state allows parents to opt out of such mandates.
Learn more about our ministry and get exclusive email updates by registering for The Legal Insider at pji.org.
He came home to Tennessee, a young man at the end of 45. Only one of seven men in his platoon that made it back alive. He must have seen some tough times, but he never talked too much about all that. Put his pictures and his memories in the cedar chest. Everything but his old army hat. By the time I graduated, the winds of change had blown across our land. They were burning flags and draft cards when they bothered to take some kind of stand. And we used to laugh at Grandpa like he was some old relic from the past. 'Cause he never left the house unless he was wearing that funny looking worn out army hat. Every eye was on him anytime that he went anywhere. They whispered and they pointed, but you could tell that Grandpa didn't care. guys who gave everything, the least that I can do is keep on wearing this old army hat. He called me up one morning, said he'd seen it on the news on his TV. They've opened up a monument to World War II in Washington, D.C. I'm getting any younger, and I wish someone would take me to see that. I couldn't help but think they're gonna laugh at you up there if you show up in that silly army hat. Two strangers both saluted as Grandpa walked up to the monument. One said, "Thank you, soldier, for a job well done." The other said, "Amen." And a young boy said, "Sir, my daddy went to war and never made it back. Would you take a picture standing here beside me? And maybe let me wear your army hat?" Every eye was on him, and there was not a dry one in the crowd. They whispered and they pointed, and Grandpa stood up extra tall and proud. He said, "Son, just keep it." When the young boy tried his best to give it back, "You're a brave little soldier, son, and every soldier needs his very own authentic army hat. For your daddy who gave everything, the least that I can do is pass on this old worn out army hat."
Good morning, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions. And that took place at the World War II Memorial, when we were taking all of the World War II veterans and Korean War veterans back to see the monument and the World War II Memorial there. If you never had an opportunity to be there, it's one of the most beautiful sights in all of our nation. And the big waterfalls and the whole area that represents all of our different military personnel from all the 50 states and from all the different basically the different branches and the different war zones and things that took place during World War II. And, and John, we were able to take you back there too, and you were able to be a part of that program. And it was, it's really hard to describe sometimes unless you've been there. And you can look at pictures of it, and pictures are beautiful, but when you walk out there on the memorial and you feel the cool air blowing across the granite and you listen to the silence and the people that are walking around, and you listen to the water as it falls and echoes off the granite, and it's just the sky is blue and the clouds are wisping as they blow over Washington, D.C. there, and it's just the marble is white and the sun glistens off of all of the marble that's there, and it's just, it's so picturesque. But when you're there, you just feel it has a feeling of its own. And when you read the names and you see what took place there, and you see the veterans that are there, and some are in wheelchairs and some are with canes and some are walking, and the families that are there with them, what an honor and what a tribute it is to say thank you to our veterans. And whether it didn't matter what veteran you were when you were there, it was a World War II memorial, but it honored all of our veterans who serve our nation. And once again, John, an opportunity this morning. John Baker's my guest, Korean War veteran. A thank you to you for your service. We're talking about the aircraft that you were working with and flying with, which was the B-26. And I thought you were as a flight crew mechanic, but I didn't realize you were actually a flight crew kind of a co-pilot on the B-26. Tell us a little bit about being the co-pilot and the engineer on the 26. I know that you did some combat missions, and talk to us a little bit about that experience, if you can. I know it's a lot to throw out there.
Well, in 1950, they lost so many aircraft that they were flying daylight missions, and they had to go to nighttime missions, and they call them nighttime, I've forgotten, nighttime marauders or something. But they lost so many aircraft that they went to nighttime so that we could fly. We'd look for light, like trains going up through tunnels. They'd hide in tunnels. If you could catch them before they got in there, you could strafe them or bomb them.
Those were called midnight marauders, weren't they? Midnight marauders?
Yeah. And I was on a couple. I got a couple of pictures. They're in the museum somewhere. Christine filed them away, but they were. We dropped fragmentation bombs, and they would drop down and they would explode at different heights. And I've got pictures of those dropping down in a crossroad. We'd bomb the road so they couldn't go that way.
Right.
One night, one of the bombers took off from K-9 Busan and had a full load of bombs, and it got out maybe 1,000 yards out, and it just exploded. There was nothing left. You couldn't find anything.
The bodies were nothing. The aircraft.
Yeah.
Did they ever know what caused it?
No, it was gone.
One of those freak accidents.
Yeah.
I know that I had talked with another World War II navigator who actually was a bombardier on a B-17, and they were flying out of New Guinea, and they would fly out of Brisbane and then bomb over New Guinea in that area in the South Pacific, and they had a brand new crew had come in on a B-17, and it was their first mission out. And as they were flying down the runway getting ready to take off, they hit a kangaroo at the end of the runway. And it blew out one of the tires, and the whole B-17 crashed and burned at the end of the runway. Mm-hmm. Brand new crew. None of them were over the age of 24 years old, 11 mm-hmm. men. And so tragedy strikes and tragedy happens. And who knows the reason why something like that happens and takes place. 11 men, brand new crew, first Virgin flight, and they hit a kangaroo on the runway. And it takes all their lives. And that's how it was in Iraq also. There was things like that. War is hell.
Yeah, we lost a few. They hit mountains. In fact, a couple of our commanders, they had to get so many flight hours to get paid. So they'd go up and take a mission. We lost a few of them like that. They'd hit a mountain.
And that was in the North Korea area.
Yeah.
So that was at night because there was no, I mean, if it didn't show it on the map or you were off a few degrees, you weren't flying through a valley, you were flying right across the peaks.
Yeah, they weren't that active. They only go up for, say, 4 or 5 hours a month to get their time in.
How many missions did you end up flying while you were there?
Probably only about 15, because then they shipped me to Miho Air Force Base in Japan. And I started test hopping battle damage B-26s out of the repair station.
Were there any missions when you were flying in Korea that seemed to stand out more than others?
Probably the daylight one where we dropped the fragmentation bombs and we could see them exploding all over the place.
Well, yeah, when we talk about being a target, did you ever take flak in your aircraft or enemy fire?
Yeah. We had holes in them every once in a while. You wouldn't see them, but you get back and you find holes in the airplane.
Thank you, John, for your service. You know, there's so many times that we have individuals who serve with us and around us, and we never know completely what the story is or where you've been or what you've done. Thank you for putting your life in harm's way for us when you served. How old were you at that time? 20?
I turned 19 in February when I got over there, so yeah, I was 19 most of the time I was there.
All right, we're going to get ready to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions.
Well, if you ask me where I come from, here's what I tell everyone.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says he will not help Democrats again to extend the government's borrowing authority. Correspondent Ken Lorman reports the Kentucky Republican has issued his warning in a letter to the president one day after the Senate approved a $480 billion boost in the federal debt limit, enough to last about 2 months.
McConnell has insisted the Democrats can raise the debt ceiling by themselves by employing the same special budget process they're already using for their enormous domestic tax and spending measure. Those procedures forbid filibusters from being used against certain bills. Democrats say they won't use the process, which they call too cumbersome, but it would also require them to raise the debt limit by a specific dollar amount that they fear Republicans will use in campaign ads attacking them. Ken Lorman reporting.
Also at townhall.com, average long-term mortgage rates declined this week. John Scott reports.
The benchmark 30-year loan slipping back below 3%. Mortgage buyer Freddie Mac reports that the average rate for a 30-year mortgage eased to 2.99% from 3.01% last week. The rate for a 15-year loan, a popular option for homeowners refinancing their mortgages, fell to 2.23% from 2.28%. John Scott reporting.
President Biden's vaccine mandate on a collision course with GOP-backed lawsuits. In the coming weeks, more than 100 million Americans will be subject to vaccine requirements ordered by the Biden administration. Last month, Biden announced he will require businesses with 100 or more employees to have workers vaccinated or tested each week. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-555-2085. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-555-2085. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-555-2085. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-555-2085. 800-555-2085.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan meeting with his Israeli counterpart in Washington and, quote, reaffirm the strength of the U.S.-Israeli partnership. Former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. Michael Oren tells the Salem Radio Network he hopes the White House meeting was productive.
Let me couch it as hope, okay? I don't know what they talked about. I hope that he talked about that Jake Sullivan, yes, I have a very high opinion of Jake Sullivan, told his Israeli counterpart that the United States intends to go back to talks with Iran.
Oren says he hopes the meeting also focus on defense.
Maybe they're optimistic about getting the JCPOA renewed, and in which case the United States is going to do X, Y, and Z to enhance Israel security, which means understandings.
A blast in a mosque packed with Shiite Muslim worshippers has killed at least 46 people in Afghanistan. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. For the Speaker of the House, the news, not really good.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is the best-known leader of Congress and the least popular, with more voters now rating her unfavorably than at any time since she was chosen to lead by her party. Her Republican counterpart, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, has better ratings but is much less well-known to voters. A new Rasmussen Reports national telephone and online survey finds that only 35% of likely U.S. voters now have a favorable view of Pelosi, while 60% regard her unfavorably. This includes 19% with a very favorable opinion of the San Francisco Democrat and 51% with a very unfavorable one. Only 4% have no opinion of her. Bernie Bennett reporting.
Coast Guard investigators say that underwater Southern California oil pipeline was likely struck by a huge anchor from a large vessel several months before the leak spilled tens of thousands of gallons of crude. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
I have slept the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. Wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, where never lark nor even eagle flew. And while with silent, lifting mind, I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God.
Good morning, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that poem that was just read is called High Flight. And that is about flying a jet aircraft up into the sky and being able to just have the freedom of spinning the aircraft and, like it said, climbing through columns and columns of clouds up in the air where, once again, those that have the opportunity to fly, there's a totally different world out there than anybody else knows. And when you're a pilot and you fly, and you have the control of that aircraft to go pretty much wherever you want to go, altitude wise and otherwise, used to be you could do pretty much anything you wanted to. Now the sky is more regulated than it ever has been before. And so I'm a fixed wing and a helicopter pilot. And so it's much easier to fly the helicopter because you can go low altitude and go pretty much anywhere you want. But when you lift off the ground and you're the pilot, you're the PIC, and or you're in a second seat and you feel the gravity go away and now you're weightless in the aircraft as you're flying. There's an experience being in the front seat that has nothing to do with being a passenger in the back seat. Totally different world, totally different mindset. And when you look down and you see the world from a higher altitude and look over the valleys and down over the mountain peaks and everything else, those people, they drive their cars and all they see is a mountain peak or a valley. They see a house or a building. They never see what's on the horizon. And I think that that's one of the greatest things that becoming a pilot in flying is that the horizon goes and goes and goes forever. And when you're in the front seat and you're looking out and you're seeing that horizon as you're flying, it brings a whole different world to you than an individual who never gets a chance to be in the front seat of an aircraft. So John, being the co-pilot and the flight crew of the B-26, when you were flying over Korea, I know that when I was in Korea, a lot of Korea looks kind of like the coastal range in California. I mean, it's low rolling mountains and a lot of scrub oak and little valleys and ravines and things like that. Was there ever any experiences or things? I know you did a lot of night missions, but when you were in Korea doing the bombing runs, could you see the enemy on the ground?
Not really.
What kind of altitude were you guys flying at?
Oh, jeez. Well, a couple of pictures I have that we were just 500 feet off the ground.
Oh, a lot of low level.
Yeah.
Well, and that's true because the higher you are, the greater the target.
Yeah.
So that must have been an e-ticket ride when you were flying low level like that. What did you guys do? Probably about 200 knots?
I think, I forget where we were redlined at 375, I think. So
375 at 500 feet.
That's the red line where you didn't go over that.
Right.
So maybe 200.
Yeah, 200 to 300 knots.
Yeah.
Flying at about 500 feet off. There's no other experience in the world like that.
Yeah.
So you're on top of your target in a matter of seconds.
Yeah. I remember that when I came back, when I was stationed at Luke, we flew around the United States quite a bit, and I always hated to go through the San Bernardino Pass, the mountains there, and also El Paso. You could look down and see all the little airplanes just dotted down to there. Never made it.
Oh, on the mountainside.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had to go through the clouds because you never know what the mountain's going to come up at you. And you go through those passes and you see all those little airplanes down, still down there.
That's Conejo Pass, wasn't it? Was that Conejo or is that San Bernardino? Was out that, that was the large pass out there by Palm Springs?
Yeah.
That big, tall mountain range down through there.
Yeah.
I've flown through there also, but it was during the day. So you didn't have the aircraft at that time in 1950s. The B-26 didn't have a lot of navigation equipment on it for flying at night. I mean,
no,
at
they,
that time it was ADF, wasn't it? I mean, it was automatic direction finder off of radio signals from a radio station.
Yeah, they started putting navigators on when we went to nighttime because they didn't know where they were going.
It makes it kind of tough if the pilot doesn't know. Well, it's hard enough to fly at night anyway,
yeah.
Keeping it straight and level, and then trying to look at the maps at the same time. I mean, that's always been a real challenge for me, flying at night with the maps. Now it's just all GPS. You just follow the GPS. It tells you your altitude, and it gives you a line to fly.
Yeah.
But when I first started flying also back in the 70s, it was, you know, you had the map in your lap. You had a red light. And you're looking down and watching your instruments. You're looking down watching your instruments. And, you know, it's really, really easy to become disoriented in an aircraft at night during those older days, especially since there was such simple instruments. There was nothing that was sophisticated. They were just coming out with IFR, which is instrument flight rules, and ILSs, instrument landing systems, and things like that. So
they went to an Omega navigation, too, later. They had, like, three main stations. One was Honolulu, where they'd have a tower and a couple other places. But if you like, you're flying into Anchorage right at dusk, at nighttime, it caused a diurnal shift. You'd be off about 15 miles.
15 miles because of magnetic interference.
Yeah. So they'd write it up, and then you go check it out and couldn't find nothing wrong. So.
Because the magnetism up there changes for true north. I could see how that would be a problem. That would be really easy to be that far off and to hit a mountain or something like that in that area.
Then they went to INS, so that was pretty accurate.
You know, people don't understand the history of aviation and how dangerous it was in the very beginning. It wasn't just barnstorming. It was there was no equipment. Yeah. It was you flew literally by the seat of your pants. Even flying where you were flying, if the pilot didn't have your pilots didn't have good sense of where they were and the altitudes and things like that, it was literally flying by instinct in the seat of their pants.
Yeah.
Did you guys have some close experiences when you were flying in Korea?
Not too much. Just you wouldn't see the fire until you got back. You'd see the holes in the airplane, but you never see anything.
They were just probably shooting from the hip because they could hear you but not see you.
Yeah.
So what did you do when you finally got out of the Air Force?
Let's see. Oh, I tried to get on Mather Air Force Base as a mechanic, but they weren't hiring. And then to the German aircraft mechanics only making $2.50 an hour at that time.
$2.50. You know, when was that? 1954?
Yeah, 54.
$2.50 an hour.
So I went to work on the Folsom Dam. I got on there on a wagon drill, the chuck tender. And I worked there till Sierra College opened up for the year. And I went to college for 2 years at Sierra College in Auburn. And in the summertime, I worked up at Lake Tahoe as a tree trimmer. Topping trees around lodges and stuff. And after that, I went to work for the state for 9 months. We drilled holes all around the delta. Went down 20 to 30 feet down to hard sand through
all the muck.
Muck and peat moss and stuff. And then I guess after that, I moved up to Burney. My mother and dad had moved up to Burney, so I moved up there to where they were at, and I went to work for the sawmills for a couple of years and met my wife up there.
Marty.
We moved to Reading for a couple of years, and then I decided to go down. Some of my friends were working on the BART tunnel, and I was going to go down and see if I could get on with them, and they weren't hiring. So I saw an ad in the paper for SFO helicopters, and I was heading for there. And before I got to them, World Airways hangar was there, so I stopped in there, and they hired me. And I went from there for 35 years. Stayed with them about 4 years, and then I worked at different airlines because, well, the airlines, vice presidents and directors and all of them, they moved a lot around a lot to different good jobs they could find.
Hold that thought, John. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Aloha, this is Kevin, Operations Manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Who have served their country in the
watchful eye, we remember, and may the faithful proud machines who bore the sword of freedom on their be given the honor such a burden brings when we
you're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that song is called We Remember, obviously, but if you ever have a chance to go on YouTube and watch that video on YouTube, it shows, you hear all those aircraft engines flying, those radial engines, those jet engines, and it just shows the aircraft that are flying and the different missions that they flew on, and it shows the pilots that are there. It's just, it's a very moving, very touching, but it's very honorable video. And John, we played that for you in remembrance of you know, your B-26 crews and flying over there in Korea and flying those aircraft. And, you know, they call the Korean War the Forgotten War, but we don't forget the war. We honor you, and we honor your other Korean War veterans who served our nation during that time frame right after World War II. You know, one of the aircraft that we have in the museum collection is the B-54 Canberra bomber, and it was one of the first times that the United States had to buy aircraft outside of the United States. We bought 472 Canberra bombers in 1949, 1950, because all of the aircraft manufacturers and all the companies had been shut down. All of the aircraft facilities had been shut down. We did not have any new jet technology, and we did not have any medium bombers. It was right there at the beginning of the atomic age. And so we contracted with England for the Canberra bomber. England designed it and was built in Canberra, Australia. And then we received those. First time the United States had ever bought foreign aircraft for our fleets of aircraft. And so the Canberra bomber that we have is out there at the airport. If you've ever seen it out by the Federal Express building, that's going to be one of our first aircraft. It was used by NASA. And it was also used by the CIA as a spy plane in the late 50s, early 60s. But when it was first designed, it was a Cold War bomber, carried atomic bombs during the first part of the Cold War from Korea into the Cold War with Russia. And so we're very pleased and fortunate to have that as part of the museum collection. And it's 65 feet wide by 65 feet long. It was the predecessor to the U-2 spy plane. And so we're very fortunate to have that as part of our collection also. So thank you again, John. We were talking about you just gotten out of the Air Force, and we were talking about you had just started working at World Airlines, and you were a mechanic for World and for Alaska, but you were also an inspector, and you said that you had to fly every aircraft that had been worked on. That's a lot of flying hours.
I was required to fly every test top out of heavy maintenance.
And you said some of those were, the aircraft that are flying at that time were the older jets. I mean, the 707, the 727, the DC-9s, the 747, or first model, first generation 747s. That's a lot of aircraft coming off the runway.
We had 200 747s, and we got a lot of DC-10s, DC-1030s.
Those early jets were really, really kerosene burners. I mean, when they took off, they left large black jet streams of kerosene smoke coming out of the back of them, almost like the F-4 Phantom. I mean, you could see it coming from the smoke that was behind it because of those kerosene burners like that. So what are some of the experiences? How many hours do you think that you flew when you were flying with Alaska Airlines?
Oh, God, I couldn't even tell.
I mean, thousands of hours.
It was probably 4 hours every time we did a test stop. So that was, we'd probably do one every 2 or 3 months.
Well, you flew, you retired from Alaska Airlines.
Yeah, I did 10 years with them.
And then you flew all over, I mean, you were stationed all over the world with, was it Alaska or World Airlines?
Well, I flew around with World mainly. I made about 3 trips around the world with World.
Wow. So when you went out and did your, I mean, you were testing aircraft literally all over the world.
Well, not really testing then. They'd sent me over to, because I was inspection supervisor. There was bases in England, around London and south of London, that did maintenance on our 727s. And they'd send me over to watch the check. To inspect the paperwork and everything, and did a lot of that. And then I went to Jakarta, Indonesia for 2 months, 1 year, and then I went to, I spent about almost 2 years in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Wow.
Malaysian Airlines did a heavy check on a DC-10 over there, and we had to cover that. And then we covered Hajj trips where they flew the pilgrims. They had to go to Mecca once a year in their life. So all these old people would go at least once in their life. And they would fly about 20 days, and we'd have about 10 days in between, a hiatus, they call it, and then they would fly them all back after that.
Well, that was quite an experience being on all those different locations around the world. That's almost like being deployed in the military.
Yeah.
Hey, we're coming up on another break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We'll be right back.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning.
Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on the Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
We're here with Mortgage Matt from Megastar Financial here in Reading. Now, Matt, I hear we're kind of in a mortgage boom right now. Can you tell us more about the benefits of possible refinancing your home right now?
So the thing right now that is different with refinancing ever in history, rates are at an all-time low, values are at an all-time high. So right now, people are able to lower their interest rate and get rid of mortgage insurance.
Matt, what if someone has just recently purchased a home or recently financed, like a year ago?
You know, this last year has been insane. A lot of people with the work-from-home phenomena, there's a lot of people moving here from metropolitan areas. That has really boosted the value of houses. So right now, people are looking to remodel their home or consolidate debt. They're able to do that at a lower cost with a cash-out refinance than they ever have in history.
Megastar Financial, America's most trusted mortgage company, located at 920 Hilltop Drive next door to Chuck E. Cheese. Call 999-9000 or get started online at megastarreading.com. NMLS 1162668.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
Reading Electric Utility, like more than 2,000 utilities across the country, is a nonprofit public power agency owned by the customers. This year, we are celebrating 100 years of serving the city of Reading. October 3rd through the 9th is Public Power Week, and we celebrate the benefits of living in a public power community. These benefits include low rates and local control. Community ownership means your money stays right here in Reading. Publicly owned utilities like REU provide excellent service and work directly for the community.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. Children's carousel, the chestnut trees, the wishing well. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll always think of you that way. find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and I played that song for my mom, who's a World War II spouse. You know, she's still alive. She's still doing well at 94. And so, Mom, if you're out there listening, that's played that for you. She always used to talk about those wonderful World War II songs when she was waiting for my dad to come back. They pen-palled all through the war and then married as soon as he returned. And so that was sent out to my mom, Florence Burroughs. She also worked for the United States Navy during the war. During that time, she was a civilian. She worked as a contractor with the Navy. And she worked in at Rough and Ready Island down in Central California, just outside of Sacramento there in Stockton. And they refitted ships to go back out to war after they came back in and had battle damage. And so, once again, John, that song kind of applies to you, too, because we were talking about you being with the different airlines and being stationed all over the world, coming and going. You, a lot of the different aircraft during that time frame you were attached to or working with were military contracts and things like that. Tell us a little bit more. You're naming off all these countries around the world where you had been flying into. It's pretty unique and interesting about what you're doing. So you talked about Hawaiian Airlines. You worked for Hawaiian Airlines.
Oh, yeah.
And then being in England. And
Hawaiian started a charter out of San Francisco, and we had a DC-8. The first year I was there, I maintained it. I was the only one that maintained it. I could hire a couple of mechanics to help me, but I maintained that. It would fly, like Saturday morning, it would fly to Honolulu and come back Sunday night and sit in San Francisco all week. So then I'd maintain it, change tires and all kinds of stuff. And then the second year, they got an Lockheed L-1011, and it was so big that we had TWA do the maintenance on it, and I would just release it when they were through. And we flew that around the world. I went to London with it, stayed all night, and then went to Paris. I stayed a week in Paris with the crew. And we went to Jamaica with it and a few other places.
New Zealand, you said?
Yeah. Stayed all night in Christchurch.
So you really were a world traveler with those aircraft. Do you ever have any emergency situations within those aircraft that have been worked on that you're doing flight checks?
Well, we had a DC-8. We had some military charters, and I think that was the one we went to New Zealand with. And we had a fuel valve that wasn't working. I think it was on the right outer wing. It wouldn't fill up. So when we took off from New Zealand, the airplane...
It yawed to the left.
And
well, there's probably 400 or 500 gallons at 8 pounds a gallon.
Oh yeah.
That weren't in the tip of that aircraft. I mean,
slowly rolled up to the left. It was a little scary.
Good thing the pilot was able to get some altitude and keep it in the air.
Yeah.
So did they continue the flight, or did you bring it back in and land it?
No, we came on home.
So you went ahead and burned all the fuel out of the other wingtip.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's amazing to me, and that would be an attribute to you in the industry, that as many aircraft take off and land and as many different types of aircraft through the years that there have been, that there have not been more fatalities or accidents in the air.
Yeah.
You as a flight inspector, flight check inspector, verifying the repairs. I mean, there's so many mechanical parts, especially in the turbines themselves. And then everything else that's mechanical working on the aircraft. And it's like you said, we were talking about parts that wear out fast. You were talking about all of the wing parts and bearings that Boeing put in their aircraft and the MD-80 that wore out within a year.
737s.
Whereas other aircraft, they lasted forever. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's when bearings fail, I mean, it's either lubrication or because it's defective chromium on the outside of the ball bearings. I mean, it's just, you know, it's one or the other. But if you're not watching for that, if you're not inspecting for it, you know, that could be a fatality at 40,000 feet.
They were wearing out in a year. come into the hangar after a year and be shaken.
Oh, so that, because they were so loose, they were getting vibration in at altitude.
Yeah,
that's just amazing on those items.
I had one narrow escape when I was with World. We had I forgot what airline it was. We did a heavy maintenance on it, and the fuel gauges were calibrated in liters instead of pounds. Everything else we worked on was pounds. So when they went on a test hop, my manager wanted to take it, so I stayed there at the hangar. And when they come back, they hadn't fueled it right, and they were on fumes.
Holy mackerel. Because less fuel with liters than there are with gallons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tragic mistake right there.
Thought they had a lot of fuel, and they're on fumes.
Yeah, you don't make that mistake very many times. Yeah. And then it's the last mistake you make that way. So did they get that problem fixed?
Yeah.
I mean,
they left, but they left it in liters because they knew that's where they wanted it. But that was a scary for a test stop.
Well, you would think that when the pilot looked at the fuel log, that he would see how many gallons or liters that were loaded.
Yeah.
For him to be able to interpolate, what that was. I mean, that's one of the reasons that pilots are supposed to be responsible for checking their fuel.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was World's pilots or whether it was the pilots from that owned the airline.
Wow. Yeah. That's how critical mistakes can become.
Yeah.
Just like that. Well, let's transfer past that. Let's talk about now that, you've been, when you came back and when was it that you joined the Korean War veterans here in Shasta County?
I'd heard about it. I saw it in the paper or something for several years, but then I don't know how I really got involved in it. I found out where there was a meeting down at the VFW Hall in Anderson, and I went down and joined. And I guess I was there about a year, and there was that's when the state wanted all these different organizations to pay taxes. So the guy that was treasurer ahead of me, it took him about a year to get it all straightened out because they hadn't been paying taxes for 5 years or more. They hadn't even filed anything.
Wow.
And he talked me into taking treasurer, and he bailed out.
He says, I'm out of here.
I'm working on my ninth year now.
9 years. So tell us a little bit about the Korean War veterans. I mean, how many? I know you've got veterans that are that you're losing all the time because of age and sickness and different things like that. But you have in your organization, because I've had the opportunity to speak on several occasions to the Korean War veterans group. You have everybody in there. You have the Army and the Marine Corps. You have CBs in there.
Yeah.
You have women veterans, women Marines, mm-hmm. women Army, women Air Force. Army Air Corps, you have a wide variety of Korean War veterans that live in this community that are part of that organization. Yeah.
There's a lot more that we could get, but they just, younger guys don't want to join. The way it started out, it was everybody that was there during the war from 1950 to 53, then they decided to hire, bring in, veterans that weren't actually in Korea, but were in during the war. So we got a lot of those. And but now they never did end the war over there. So anybody that's over there now, even up to today, could join our chapter if they wanted to. There's still a war, actually.
Right, and there's so many, actually probably more Army veterans than not that have served in Korea. I know the CBs go there all the time and do humanitarian projects and things like that along the DMZ and for the different communities.
Yeah, I see people with Korean War hats around town a lot, but they're not. You don't join our club.
So we're going to do a shout-out. If you're a Korean War veteran and you'd like to be a part of this organization for the Korean War veterans with other Korean War veterans, even if you're younger, you need to step up to the plate and start taking over some of the responsibility, because as we lose some of our older veterans, we need younger veterans to step in and take that place. We're coming up on a break right now. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. Our guest is John Baker, United States Air Force, Korean War. We'll be right back.
High Noble Safe Company, formerly known as Cold Steel Safe Company at 2559 Larkspur Lane, is having a summer clearance sale. Save big on some of the highest quality safes around. High Noble Safe Company carries High Noble, Browning, and American Security, just to name a few, and features gun safes, home safes, and high security safes with stores in Redding, Roseville, and Petaluma. Delivery, moving, and repair service available. Call 530-223-5050. That's 530-223-5050. Or stop by High Noble Safe Company at 2559 Larkspur Lane.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Slow down. Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Football is life. Get in the game. Head down to Wind River Resort and Casino on Thursday nights to catch your favorite pro team on any of our 12 TV screens and giant 12-foot projection screen inside overtime. Enjoy game day bites every Thursday from 5 p.m. until the end of the game. What is better than football? Enjoying the game with nachos, wings, pizza, and your favorite pints. Come get your fingers messy at Overtime Bar every Thursday night. Some people talk football. We live it at Wind River Resort and Casino.
happy birthday, United States Navy, coming up October 13th. That's Wednesday of this next week, and that goes out to all of our Navy veterans. To say thank you to them for their service and to wish the United States Navy a happy birthday. Our guest this morning is John Baker with the United States Air Force, our Korean War veteran. And, John, I just wanted to say thank you. We've got our last few minutes here coming up on the program. I can never say thank you to our veterans enough who serve, who set that example before us. I want to say thank you personally for me because as you've been a part of the museum and you've worked with the museum over since 2009, you have been a vital and a key part of bringing it together. You've worked on all of our different projects. You've helped put our libraries together. You've helped build everything up out at the airport and take everything down when we lost our lease and we had to leave. And then you've been there in Anderson as we put everything back together again and we put our offices together in the archive. And you've just been a trooper. You've been a hard worker. You've been, like I said, you've been a mentor to me. You don't say a lot, but you're a big example. And sometimes, you know, a person's example is greater than any words that they can say. And you outwork me on many occasions. You're right there working hard with me with all the different projects, whether it's painting or pouring concrete or digging out rock like we did with the well this last week or hanging tin around our well house because we part of our well house burned up with that fire back in March. And so we rebuilt the well house with tin siding to make sure that it was fire resistant. And you just, you don't say a lot, but you're there and you just keep pressing forward. And that's a great example to me. And so I thank you for that. And I know that our other board members feel the same way. You know, you're consistent and we appreciate that consistency. But, you know, you've been a good friend and I appreciate that also. You don't always get a chance to say thank you to people around you. But I think it's so important that we do stop and we say thank you and we show the appreciation for things that people do around us. Military with military, there's an appreciation there. Yeah. And, you know, as one military member sets the example, many times you don't have to say anything. You just know there's a camaraderie there. And it doesn't matter whether it's young to old or old to young. There's lessons to be learned. There's opportunities to be enjoyed. And like I said, when it comes to the museum, you've been there and you've been, a key part of everything that we've been doing. And I look forward to working with you for many more years to come. What are you now, John? Are you 89?
I'll be 89 February.
89 in February. Up. So you got a birthday coming up a couple months away from here.
4 months.
So, you know, I want to say happy birthday early to you, John.
And I'll make it.
you'll make it. I have no doubt. You'll probably outlive the rest of us. And so, because you're just that kind of, you've got the tenacity to just keep on going. I know you've had some sicknesses here and there. We tried to have you here on the air several different times, but, you're feeling really good right now. And so we're taking advantage of that and having it in there, especially since you and I were out there sweating our butts off this last week, getting that well ready to go. And that's another keystone, another milestone for the museum and for all those who work hard to make this happen. I wanted to bring up a couple of dates here real quick that are really important. If you're not aware of it, we're going to be doing our Christmas for the Troops program again. And that's going to be December 4th. That'll be at the Anderson VFW. And that will be from 1 in the afternoon till 6 in the evening. And we'll be having, we haven't announced what kind of meal we're going to be having, but we'll be having a meal. It's a $5 donation. That helps offset the cost of the food and also helps offset the cost of the shipping. The packages have gone up again this year. The U.S. Postal Service, we can only ship overseas through the U.S. Postal Service. And our normal box that we generally use, the large box, is like $23 right now to ship a box. And so, last year it cost us $8,000 to ship boxes overseas. So we can't ship the box if we don't have the money for shipping, but then we can't ship the box if we don't have items to put in the box. So we're probably going to downsize the box so we're not paying so much for shipping. But we definitely need your donations out there. If you're listening, we'd like to have you donate non-perishable items for the troops as we get ready to move forward and we get ready to ship these boxes. It's taken twice as long now to ship items overseas. That's why we're doing our program December 4th. And we want to be able to make sure that we can get those items into the boxes and get those shipped out so that we can go ahead and try to get them to the troops that are overseas before Christmas, if possible. And so if you have a family member that is serving, whether they're in the United States or they're overseas and are not going to be home, we'd like to request you to get that address to us so that we can go ahead and ship a box to them, say thank you from our community and thank you from those family members and things like that that want to say thank you. We're looking for cards. We're also looking, when you go out for and buy Halloween candy, buy an extra bag for the troops. Buy an extra bag of candy for our military personnel, and you'll be able to drop them off at that evening at the event on December 4th, or you can drop them off at the museum offices. Let me give you the phone number for the museum office. The office number is 378-2280, 378-2280, or you can also drop them off at the Cottonwood Firehouse down in Cottonwood, the old historic Cottonwood Firehouse at 3271 Brush Street. And so we are in and out. We're bouncing around, taking care of all these wonderful and great things that are happening in our community. And once again, these things don't happen without our volunteers. And so, John, you have been one of those greatest volunteers that have worked and supported the museum. We're coming up on our last few minutes. Is there anything else that you'd like to say about either the Korean War veterans or your career with the Air Force in Korea?
I have some pictures of the military cemetery when they first built it there. Now it's a pretty big deal. They have a big ceremony in there every year now.
What town is that in?
It's Busan.
Busan.
Right out of there. Near the K-9 Air Force Base.
And then recently the Korean government issued medals to all the Korean War veterans.
Yeah, it was actually we got two because one, about 5 years ago, we got one from a general. And then the last one was from the Korean government, I guess. But they're made out of the expended ammo. The metal is.
The brass. Yeah. The brass from the shells.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize that was the brass that was left there from because there was so many artillery shells that were left there.
Yeah.
I mean, how many ashtrays can you make? Well, we're coming up on the end of our program here. John, once again, thank you for your service to our country. Thank you to your service to our community. And, you've been involved, like I said, with the museum, with all the different programs, and you've been a key player since the very beginning as we started out. And so that is one of the things that I appreciate the most is when you show up and you be a part of all those different things that we're doing. John Baker's name is written all over everything inside the Veterans Museum. And if it's not written with his name, it's written with his hard sweat and tenacity and hard work that he's done. And there isn't a whole lot of things that we've done in there that you haven't been a part of. And so as we move forward, and we're going to put together most of the larger items that we have right now are Korean War era items, and like the M53 or M37 Korean War truck that we just rebuilt, we're in the process of putting it back together again. It's in the firehouse and full restoration, body off frame, and it is going to be a beautiful piece. Yeah. And we're still working on putting it back together again. But those are items that are a tribute to our Korean War veterans. And just one more way for us to say thank you and to remember to make sure that we have these items. When they're gone, they're gone.
You got to find those pictures that I gave Christine. She's stored them away somewhere.
Well, I'm sure that they're in one of those
8x10
boxes
pictures
upstairs in the archive. So we'll have to go through and see if we can find out which ones those are. Thank you again, John, for being here. John Baker, Korean War veteran, United States Air Force, vital member of the Northern California Veterans Museum. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Dreams. Happiness ain't out of reach. Hard work pays off the way it should. Yeah, I've seen enough to know that we've got it good. Where the stars and the stripes and the eagle fly.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.